This is The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. I'll ask the questions, and I'll let the book do the talking using words from its own pages. This is essentially a book interview. Your time is valuable, so let's get started. Today, I'll be interviewing The Mountain Is You, How to Turn Self-Sabotage into Self-Mastery by Brianna Wiest. It's a popular book with a 5-star rating from over 84% of the reviewers. Question number one, what's the book about? Answer, this book is about self-sabotage, why we do it, when we do it, and how to stop doing it for good. Usually when we have a problem that is circumstantial, we're facing the reality of life. When we have a problem that's chronic, we're facing the reality of ourselves. Self-sabotage is simply the presence of an unconscious need that's being fulfilled by a self-sabotaging behavior. Question, what's the purpose of my life? Answer, your ultimate purpose is to become the ideal version of yourself. Everything else flows from there. Question, most people want to be their best selves, but what do you tell someone who feels stuck and frustrated and uncomfortable with their present circumstances? Answer, I say to honor your discomfort. Honor your discomfort because it's trying to tell you something. The greatest gift that life will hand you is discomfort. Discomfort is not trying to punish you. It's just trying to show you where you are capable of more, deserving of better, able to change, or meant for greater than you have right now. In almost every case, it's simply informing you that there's more out there for you, and it's pushing you to go pursue it. Question, what's the first step to pursue this better life? Answer, the first step towards real change is to remove self-denial. Take a piece of paper and pen and write down everything you aren't happy with. Write down very specifically every single problem you face. If you're struggling with finances, you need to be very clear about what's wrong. Write down every debt, every bill, every asset, and every bit of income. If you're struggling with self-image, write down exactly what you dislike about yourself. If it's anxiety, write down everything that bothers or upsets you. You must first and foremost get out of denial and into clarity about what's really wrong. At this point, you have a choice. You can make peace or you can commit to changing. The greatest act of self-love is to no longer accept a life you're unhappy with. Question. Sometimes our life problems can feel insurmountable. What do you say to people who feel small in the face of their huge problems? Answer. The first step to becoming your most powerful self is to literally envision that person. Don't take yourself out of your current context either. Begin to ask yourself, what would the most powerful version of me do right now? What would they do this day? Once you have a clearer image of your most powerful self, you then need to evaluate what habits, traits, and behaviors are actively holding you back from fully embodying this person. Question. In the book, you offer 4 actionable steps to get in touch with this powerful self. Can you share these steps now? Answer. You basically use your imagination to meet your highest potential future self. This process is akin to reverse engineering, which is when you identify the end goals for your life and then work backwards to see what you need to do each day, week, month, and year to get there. There are 4 steps I would advise for this process. Step 1. Sit down in a quiet place with a journal. Make sure you're doing it at a time when you feel relaxed and open to receive guidance. If you go into this with fear, you're going to get fear. Next, close your eyes and begin a meditation session. Take a few moments to breathe deeply and center yourself. Imagine sitting down at a comfortable table in a well-lit room, somewhere that you're happy and you feel at peace. then invite your future self to come and sit with you and talk. Specifically, ask for the highest possible version of yourself to sit down. Step 2. Notice how your future self looks. Aside from what you imagine this version of yourself telling you, pay attention to what they look like, how they behave, and what their facial expressions communicate. The point of doing future self work is so that you can merge with this aspect of yourself. You want to clearly envision the most ideal version of yourself so that you'd know how your life needs to grow, shift, and change. See what they wear, how they feel, what they do each day. These will be the keys to your own becoming. Step 3. Ask for guidance. If you go into this process with a laundry list of scary, huge questions for your future self to answer, you're probably going to end up bound by panic rather than being open to receiving powerful guidance. Instead, keep yourself open to whatever this person wants to share with you. The messages should be positive, uplifting, affirming, and helpful. Even if they communicate something to you such as, you need to let go of this relationship, it should be done in such a way that is so calming and reaffirming that you're confident and at peace with it. Step 4. Imagine them handing you the keys to your new life. Remember, this process should make you feel calm, affirmed, and more self-assured, not the opposite. Fear is a hallucination, a trick of the mind and gut. Your future self can step in and remind you of all that is possible and empower you to live with certainty, clarity, and grace. Question. Okay, let's say I have this ideal version of who I'd like to be, but I still feel lost, unsure of my purpose. Do you have any advice about how to find a life purpose? Answer. Your purpose is a dynamic, evolving thing. Most of the time, it's at the intersection of what you're interested in, what you're good at, and what the world needs. Having a clear vision of what you want to create and accomplish is essential to finding your inner power. Ask yourself, what and who is worth suffering for? Even doing what you love for a living doesn't mean that every day will be easy. Everything comes with its own set of challenges, so the question is really, what are you willing to work for? What are you willing to be uncomfortable for? Close your eyes and imagine the best version of yourself. What is that person like? The best possible version of yourself, the most loving, kind, productive, and self-aware person. That's who you really are. Everything else is the byproduct of a coping mechanism that you've developed and picked up from other people. Question. Are you saying that self-sabotage is a coping mechanism? Answer. Self-sabotage is simply the presence of an unconscious need that's being fulfilled by a self-sabotaging behavior. People are pretty incredible in the fact that they basically do whatever they want to do. Self-sabotage is when you have two conflicting desires. One is conscious, one is unconscious. You know how you want to move your life forward, and yet you're still, for some reason, stuck. When you have big, ongoing, insurmountable issues in your life, especially when the solution seems so simple, so easy, and yet so impossible to stick with, what you have are not big problems, but big attachments. All the ways in which you are self-sabotaging are actually ways that you're feeding a need that you probably don't even realize you have. Question. What are some common examples of self-sabotaging behaviors that feed this kind of inner need? Answer. The following is a list of common self-sabotaging behaviors. Going back to the person who broke you in a relationship. Feeling unhappy, even if nothing is wrong, and really, you've gotten everything you've wanted in life. Pushing people away. Automatically believing what you think and feel is true. Eating poorly when you don't want to. not doing the work you know would help you move your career forward. Overworking. Caring too much about what other people think. Spending too much money. Dwelling on past relationships or continually checking up on exes. Choosing friends who always make you feel like you're in competition with them. Having self-defeating thoughts that hold you back from doing what you want. Not promoting your work in a way that would help move you forward. Staying in a city or town you claim to dislike. Mindlessly scrolling through social media as a way to pass the time. In the example of overusing social media, you're probably trying to avoid some kind of discomfort within yourself. The very discomfort that just might be telling you that you need to change. In every case of these many self-sabotaging behaviors, your subconscious mind is trying to communicate with you. If you don't want to constantly have to be fixing your choices and behaviors, you have to learn how to process and interpret your feelings in real time. This will be done by a process of building emotional intelligence. Question: how do you define emotional intelligence? Answer: emotional intelligence is the ability to understand, interpret, and respond to your emotions in an enlightened and healthy way. Self-sabotage is ultimately just a product of low emotional intelligence. Question: and how exactly is emotional intelligence related to self-sabotage? Answer: each negative emotion we experience comes with a message, one that we may not yet know how to interpret. The key is learning how to interpret negative emotions such as anger, sadness, guilt, embarrassment, jealousy, resentment, regret, or chronic fear. On the surface, it seems as though the thing that triggers the emotional response is the problem. It is not. The problem is that we don't know what to do with how we feel, and therefore do not have all the emotional processing skills that we need. We will not self-sabotage if we process our emotions in healthy ways. Question: so self-sabotaging behavior is driven by low emotional intelligence. But what if we're just chronically uncomfortable and anxious due to overthinking? Answer: most of the anxiety you experience in life is the result of inefficient critical thinking skills. You might assume that because you're anxious, you're an overthinker, someone who obsesses about unlikely and scary outcomes more than is reasonable. The reality is that you're an underthinker. You're missing part of your reasoning process. When you experience a logical lapse, the climax becomes the conclusion. You imagine a situation, you figure that you would panic, and then because you're scared, you never think through the rest of the scenario. You never think about how you'd get through it, what you'd do to respond, and how you'd eventually move on with your life afterwards. When you feel resistance to change, we should start asking the right questions. Why do I feel like this? What is this feeling trying to tell me about the action I'm trying to take? Is there something I need to learn more here? What do I need to do to honor my needs right now? Question: let's say we do the inner work and seek the guidance of our authentic inner voice. How can we tell when a gut hunch is worth listening to? Answer: your honest gut instinct won't ever frighten you into panic. Your gut is always subtle and gentle, even if it's telling you that something isn't for you. If your gut wants you to not see someone or to stop engaging in a relationship or behavior, the impulse will be quiet. That's why it's called the little voice within. We need to learn to identify intuitive nudges versus intrusive thoughts. Question: and the book does an excellent job of contrasting between intuitive nudges versus intrusive thoughts. Can you share that now? Answer: intuitive thoughts are calm. Intruding thoughts are hectic and fear-inducing. Intuitive thoughts are quiet. Intruding thoughts are loud. Intuitive thoughts often sound loving, while invasive thoughts sound scared. Intuitive thoughts usually come out of nowhere. Invasive thoughts are usually triggered by external stimuli. Even when an intuitive thought doesn't tell you something you like, it never makes you feel panicked. Even if you experience sadness or disappointment, you don't feel overwhelmingly anxious. Intuitive thoughts come from the perspective of your best self. Invasive thoughts come from the perspective of your most fearful small self. Intuitive thoughts come from a deeper place within you and give you a resounding feeling deep in your gut. Invasive thoughts keep you stuck in your head and give you a panicked feeling. Intuitive thoughts show you how to respond. Invasive thoughts demand that you react. Last question. What would you tell someone who wants to end self-sabotage and is willing to do the inner work to be more emotionally intelligent? Answer. When you stop engaging in self-sabotaging behavior, repressed emotions that you weren't even aware of will start to come up, and you might feel even worse than you did before. Don't run from emotions when you try to stop self-sabotage. Healing yourself is the most uncomfortable, disruptive, important thing you'll ever do. The real goal of what we all want in life is inner peace. The understanding that no matter what is happening around you, there is a place of total knowing and calmness within you. And last but not least, my favorite quotes from the book are as follows. Honor your discomfort because it's trying to tell you something. The greatest gift that life will hand you is discomfort. Ask yourself, what and who is worth suffering for? The greatest act of self-love is to no longer accept a life you are unhappy with. Self-sabotage is ultimately just a product of low emotional intelligence. And that's it for this book interview with A Mountain Is You, How to Turn Self-Sabotage into Self-Mastery by Brianna Wiest. You've been listening to The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. You can order this book in the links below or on our website if you'd like to support our cause. It puts a few pennies in our pockets without taking any extra pennies from yours. As always, thank you for your time.